Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. We will begin on the front page with the headline article, Money Matters. Children's Museums Largely Left Out of COVID Relief Funding. This is by Sierra Henry. When it comes to COVID relief and children's museums, having enough theater seating has been the difference between getting funding and being passed over. Some central Illinois directors are worried the problem, coupled with various other coronavirus-related capacity and loan issues, may be the difference between survival and not. The idea was that $15 billion would be available for these institutions that are economic drivers for their communities, said Beth Wissman, director of the Children's Discovery Museum in Normal. Unfortunately, the way they, Congress, wrote the grant, they eliminated a lot of medium and small museums. The Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act that Congress passed last year provides $2.3 trillion in emergency funding to schools, institutions, and small businesses to offset steep losses because of the pandemic, as well as for vaccines and other aid payments. About $15 billion was for live venues, performing arts centers, museums, aquariums, zoos, and movie theaters, which, like many parts of the economy, came to a standstill amid COVID restrictions and shutdowns. The Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, administered by the Federal Small Business Administration, sought to blunt the impact until operations could restart. Eligible businesses could get grants matching up to 45% of gross earned revenue at a maximum award of $10 million. But for children's museum officials, there's been a big problem. An institution can be considered for the venue grant only if it had fixed seating, something few of theirs do. We don't have fixed seating in an auditorium for learning and performances, and most children's museums don't have that, said Wissman. That's not how kids learn. It's kind of mind-boggling that they thought this would be necessary. The funding void is one of several major hurdles facing children's museums as the state slowly reopens after about a year of various restrictions. Like virtually all corners of the economy, the institutions have had operations overturned by COVID restrictions. Additionally, many saw severe declines in donations and giving. Currently, children's museums in Illinois can operate at 25% capacity under the Restore Illinois Plan, the state's playbook for gradually reopening businesses, restaurants, and other institutions as infection rates improve. The state last year issued a stay-at-home order as COVID cases surged. Those numbers have declined as testing and vaccines have become available. Under Phase 4, hands-on exhibits must remain closed or modified. That doesn't provide much leeway for children's museums, which are institutions created to encourage creative thinking through touch-based play, according to Central Illinois Children's Museum directors. That language, I think, is most easily interpreted as children's museums can't reopen at all because we are all an interactive component, said Rebecca Schulman, director of the Peoria Playhouse Children's Museum, which started in 2015. Children's museums are a very specific area, but they are an area that are used by hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Illinoisans alone. I understand that we're a very niche area, but we are also very important to our constituency, and we are very committed to not only reopening, but reopening right and ensuring that we are safe, said Schulman. Several museums, including the Children's Discovery Museum, Peoria Playhouse, Children's Museum of Illinois in Decatur, and the Children's Museum in Oaklawn, and the Kidsium of Health and Science in Springfield, lobbied the state to provide better guidelines for their centers. The group, along with the Association of Children's Museums, drafted guidelines to present to the Restore Illinois team, but were unsuccessful. Unable to open, Central Illinois Children's Museums are struggling as revenues have vanished. Each of the five children's museums the Pantograph spoke with reported laying off 80 to 90% of employees and losing 80 to 90% of typical operating revenue. One Central Illinois museum, the Orpheum Children's Science Museum in Champaign, has closed permanently. Children's museums operated by municipalities and park districts, such as the Normal and Peoria ones, face even greater losses and are ineligible for relief funding through programs such as the Federal Paycheck Protection Program or the Business Interruption Grant. At least three, the Children's Museum of Illinois in Decatur, the Children's Museum in Oaklawn, and the Kidsium of Health and Science in Springfield, managed to secure some relief, but directors say the money doesn't nearly begin to cover the cost of maintaining a closed institution. It's a Band-Aid, Abby Koster, who runs the Decatur Center, said of PPP loan and big grant funding. It's money that runs out, and it's also a loan that we're hoping to get forgiven. We're grateful for it, but it's not a fix for our situation. Some museums have started operations, but the financial impact is deep, said Leah Wilson, executive director of the Kidsium of Health and Science in Springfield. That's a sobering fact for children's museums, said Wilson. Even when they're allowed to open, they may not be able to financially bear the cost of opening if visitors are not coming back in the numbers they were previously. For that reason, the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant is seen as a crucial tool, and Central Illinois museum officials have joined with the Washington-based Association of Children's Museums to ask Congress to remove the fixed seating requirement. The group also wants funding to increase by at least $1.25 billion, said Allison Howard, a spokesman for the organization. "Well, we are incredibly grateful that Congress included our field in this funding opportunity. We have known from the beginning this requirement would be limiting for museums' eligibility," Howard said. The museum field as a whole has advocated to remove the requirement for fixed seating so more museums can qualify. A spokesman for U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, said in an email to the Pantograph that the senator and his office are aware of these concerns and have heard from museums. Durbin sent a letter to the Small Business Administration about 2 weeks ago, urging the office to open the grant program for applications in a timely manner. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, is also aware of museums' concerns, spokesman Tyler Cravens said in an email to the Pantograph. Cravens wrote, "Davis has consistently supported bipartisan relief efforts for businesses and nonprofits hurt by the pandemic, which will continue to be his focus." Funding for the museums came under increased scrutiny last week when Congress began debating the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which the House passed over the weekend. About $480 million was for arts, humanities, and museums. U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, Republican from Peoria, during a tour of the COVID vaccine clinic in Bloomington, said he would not support the package, which he said wastes money on things that aren't related to COVID, including a minimum wage hike, museums and humanities, and support for undocumented immigrants. LaHood spokesman John Rauber later clarified that LaHood believes museums should receive access to federal funding allocated by Congress to help them get through the COVID-19 pandemic and state-mandated closures. LaHood also met with the American Alliance of Museums on Thursday to discuss issues museums are facing, and LaHood expressed support for revising language in the Shuttered Venue Grant to ensure children's museums and other venues get access to needed funding to get through the pandemic. Amid the challenges, museums have adjusted. The Children's Museum in Oaklawn made a decision to follow a hybrid of guidelines set out for museums and businesses such as bowling alleys and arcades, said Adam Woodworth, executive director of the Children's Museum in Oaklawn. We had our voices heard, but that's as far as it went, said Woodworth. My board of directors here said, we're going to have to make a decision. Are we going to sit idly on the sidelines? The Normal and Peoria Museums launched the Illinois Play Channel to provide free resources and activities to kids. The Normal Museum also is now allowing groups of 10 to participate in a one-hour play program. In a small setting, parents and kids are able to explore the museum in a new way with a glow room and a short session in the Lucky Climber exhibit. Last Thursday, 2-year-old Landon Stommer cautiously poked his head through the child-sized entrance of the exhibit. He watched as his older brothers leaped and jumped as they climbed the carpet-covered pedals suspended above the second floor. It was the first time the family had returned since the center shut down a year ago. This is just such an amazing place for them to spend their time, said Nana Stommer of Normal. It is a place where everyone can come with their families and be in a healthy, interactive space. For families, the Children's Discovery Museum is a vital asset to the community, said Molly Scherer Barbie of Hayworth and Caddy Clockinga of Normal. Scherer Barbie and Clockinga said their children missed visiting the museum where they played a few times a week. Their kids, Evie Barbie and Nico Clockinga, darted around the museum with boundless energy Thursday afternoon, climbing up and down the Lucky Climber. A place like this allows her, Evie, to explore and be creative and run around safely, said Scherer Barbie. Without this, we've had to come up with things at home. Turning to COVID information, we have U of I test gets authorization. ISU among sites where saliva-based tests to be processed. This is by Lenore Sabota. The University of Illinois system received a much-anticipated emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Monday for its saliva-based COVID-19 test. Illinois State University is among the sites where these tests will be processed. Governor J.B. Pritzker is dedicating $20 million in funding from the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act to provide 1 million tests at the state's 12 public universities and 48 community colleges under an agreement between the U of I system and the Illinois Department of Public Health. Even as we lead large population states in vaccinations, widespread testing remains a critical tool in combating this pandemic, and I'm dedicating $20 million in CARES Act funding to provide 1 million tests to Illinois' other public universities under the FDA's emergency use authorization, Pritzker said in a statement. There has been interest in using the test, known as COVID Shield, by school systems, universities, and corporations because the process is less invasive than the nose swab method and results can be obtained within 24 hours. The Illinois Board of Higher Education devised a formula for allocating the 1 million tests. A lab set up in ISU's Science Lab building is part of the U of I's Shield Illinois network and already has been doing clinical testing. Originally, ISU planned to use the test on campus, but with the semester nearly half over, it plans to stick with its current testing process. Since we already have another testing process in place, we're not going to be switching over, ISU spokesman Eric Jones said Monday. However, ISU will keep this option open for the future, he said. John Bauer, a chemistry professor who is ISU's COVID-19 testing coordinator, has said previously that a little bit of time would be needed to get supplies in place to switch current testing sites on campus from the nasal swab to the saliva-based test. ISU has been doing antigen testing on campus this semester and getting results quickly from that, said Joan. A confirmatory PCR test also can be done if campus health officials determine it's necessary. The PCR test is considered the gold standard. Labs at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur and Loyola Medical Center in Maywood were the first in the Shield Illinois network to become operational. In addition to those two labs and the one at ISU, the network includes labs in Springfield, Rockford, Itasca, and Wooddale. The latter three are not yet fully operational, but expect to be soon. The Shield Illinois lab at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital has been operating since December as a lab-developed test prior to the Emergency Use Application, EUA, and fully compliant with the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, CLIA. Tina McDoy-Dial, Director of Laboratory Services at St. Mary Hospital, has said in an email, "The lab at St. Mary's has routinely run between 2,000 and 3,000 tests per day from 17 different institutions, including Northern Illinois University, Eastern Illinois University, Loyola University in Chicago, Rivian, and ADM. We expect that volume to increase as the program continues to grow." The U of I developed its test in 2020 and had administered more than 1.5 million tests at its Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield campuses. The quick turnaround time provided by the test has been credited with being able to hold down the spread of the coronavirus through early detection and isolation. The U of I has two units working to share the test: Shield Illinois, which is focused on expansion within the state, and Shield T3, a university-related organization working with entities outside the state. Even though the ISU lab will not be processing tests from campus, Bauer said, "We've contributed to the overall effort. The ISU lab is currently processing a few hundred tests a day, but has the capacity to do several thousand a day as Shield Illinois ramps up." The ISU lab has two shifts with a total of 8 scientists, 6 student processors, and overall technical supervisor, Kim Garris. Updating local COVID rates, we have McLean County stats remain lower and steady. County sees 75 new cases since Friday. This is by Lindsay Jones. As case numbers continue a steady or downward trend in McLean County, so too does the county's overall test positivity rate. Health department officials reported 75 newly confirmed cases of COVID-19 since Friday, and with more than 244,700 tests now completed since last year, the county's overall test positivity rate has dropped to 5.9%. Similarly, the 7-day positivity rate remains steady at 2.3% as of Sunday. Despite coronavirus statistics trending downward, hospital capacity remains relatively tight. 86% of all hospital beds in the county are filled, with 77% of all intensive care unit beds reported as in use. The health department said the total number of patients hospitalized for COVID wasn't available on Monday, but 16 county residents were reported as hospitalized with the virus. During a press conference Friday, MCHD was not able to provide further information on the consistently high rate of beds occupied in the county. Also Friday, MCHD said 1,600 doses of vaccine were allocated to the county this week. About 75% of that shipment is headed to MCHD community partners for clinics outside of the ones the health department holds in conjunction with Carl Broman Medical Center. Clinics slated for this week include Tuesday, March 2nd at the Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington for those eligible residents due and scheduled for their second dose of vaccine, including those rescheduled from the clinic on February 19th. Wednesday, March 3rd at the ARC for McLean County residents due and scheduled for their second dose of vaccine. Thursday, March 4th at the Grossinger Motors Arena for those eligible residents due and scheduled for their first or second dose of the vaccine. Data from the Illinois Department of Public Health shows more than 35,000 doses of vaccine have been administered between public and private providers to date. Nearly 12,000 people have received both doses of vaccine, putting the county's percentage of fully vaccinated people at around 6.9%. Continuing with local updates, we have Bloomington Normal gas prices on rise, price per gallon up 12 cents in a week, by Kevin Barlow. Gas prices in Bloomington Normal are up about 12 cents per gallon from a week ago and 35 cents per gallon from a month ago. According to GasBuddy.com, a Boston-based company that operates apps and websites for real-time fuel prices, the average price for a gallon of unleaded gas in the Twin Cities was $2.89 on Monday afternoon. A week ago, the price was $2.75, and a month ago, the price was $2.55. On March 1, 2020, the average price was $2.53. Gas prices between $2.78 and $2.94 per gallon were reported in the Twin Cities on Monday. The national average price of gasoline has risen for the 8th straight week, rising 7.5 cents per gallon over the last week to $2.72 on Monday, according to GasBuddy data compiled from more than 11 million individual price reports, covering over 150,000 gas stations across the country. The national average has increased 17.9 cents per gallon in the last 2 weeks, thanks to extreme cold weather in Texas shutting down refining capacity. Gas prices continued to surge following cold weather-related shutdowns in Texas, but the impact from the cold has likely run its course, said Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for GasBuddy. According to DeHaan, at last week's total gasoline demand soared to the highest level since the pandemic began almost a year ago due to COVID-19 cases dropping and more motorists traveling. On the supply side, the number of oil rigs active in the U.S. stands nearly 50% lower than a year ago, which is a large factor driving prices up, he said. To put it simply, demand is recovering much, much faster than oil production levels, which is why oil prices have soared. In Illinois, the average price for a gallon of gas was $2.89, which was 12 cents higher than a week ago. A month ago, the price was $2.55, and on March 1, 2020, the price was $2.53. On Thursday, OPEC will meet to discuss increasing oil production to slow down the rise in prices. Analysts say most drivers can expect prices at the pump to continue increasing until Gulf Coast refineries restart and resume normal operations. Next, we have update on countywide mental health plan heard. This is by Sierra Henry. A countywide plan to address mental health was the focus of a Monday night presentation to the Normal Town Council. McLean County Board Chairman John McIntyre gave an update to the Mental Health Action Plan, a partnership between Normal, Bloomington, and McLean County to address mental health challenges. The presentation was a follow-up to questions councilmen brought up during the town's recent budgeting cycle regarding a $1.58 million contribution to McLean County for mental health programs, said City Manager Pam Reese. Council members on Monday night expressed a desire to hear more regular updates from the Behavioral Health Council. That contribution was born out of a 2015 intergovernmental agreement between the town, Bloomington, and McLean County to address mental health challenges, such as better equipping and educating first responders when responding to mental health crises. In September 2015, Normal increased the town's home rule sales tax from 1.5% to 2.5% and approved an ordinance requiring the town to distribute 25% of the net revenue generated from the rate increase to McLean County for the Mental Health Action Plan. Through the town and Bloomington's contributions to the program, McLean County was able to open the McLean County Triage Center, which opened in March 2020. The center, located at 200 West Front Street in Bloomington, helps people 18 and older experiencing behavioral health crises. The Monday night presentation gave a brief overview of the history of the Behavioral Mental Health Council and the Mental Health Action Plan and some of the projects and services funded through this program. Next, we have Slain Prison Officer Returns to Central Illinois for Burial by Donette Beckett. Luke Doetman waited patiently for the remains of his uncle, Lieutenant Eugene Lasco, to arrive at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. A lieutenant with Indiana Department of Corrections who was born in Decatur, Lasco, 57, died February 21st after being stabbed at Indiana State Prison, where he had worked for nearly 12 years. The State Department of Corrections said he was assisting 22-year-old Sergeant Patrick Smith, who was wounded in the attack. "He went above what was expected," Doetman said, "but now we are bringing him home." A police escort accompanied Lasco from Michigan City, Indiana, to Graceland Cemetery in Decatur for burial, arriving at the site that included a large American flag hanging from a Decatur Fire Department ladder truck. Waving in the wind and even more flags lining the path, the procession followed to the site of the intimate ceremony attended by about 24 loved ones. He was laid to rest with other Lasco family members, including his mother, Hester Walker. Monday's ceremony followed a much larger remembrance of Lasco's life Sunday evening in Indiana that included family, friends, state dignitaries, and co-workers. "We feel he died a hero," Doetman said. "He didn't have to do what he did." Local officers arrived in Indiana Monday morning before the Lasco family started on their journey to Decatur. Sergeant Clayton Barrows with the Macon County Sheriff's Department was one of the escorts during the three-hour drive. "When I saw that he was from Decatur, it's just a no-brainer for me," Barrows said about his decision to volunteer to be part of the escort detail. "The service was a somber event, touching the heart of the officer. It can happen to anybody at any time," Barrows said. "It's a brotherhood." Although officers and first responders are often in harm's way, honoring anyone who falls in the line of duty is important, Barrows said. "If you can participate and be involved in laying them to rest, then it's worth it." The Macon County Sheriff's Department led the escort of Lasco's remains through the state. Four Illinois State Police motorcycles surrounded the hearse as it traveled to its final destination. Lasco's death is a reminder for many law enforcement officers of the dangers involved in their jobs. "There's some people that are still dangerous, even when they are behind bars," said Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz. "I think this shows that. And at a time when we are enabling things because of police reform, we've still got to remember how dangerous some of these people are and that it's just not on the streets, but also behind bars." One group for which the tragedy hit particularly close to home was AFSCME Local 31, the union that represents prison correctional officers in Illinois. According to the Illinois Correctional Employees Memorial Association, 35 corrections officers have died in the line of duty. Spokesman Anders Lindell said that the last full fiscal year from July 2019 through June 2020, there were nearly 800 reported incidents in which Illinois prison staff were assaulted by inmates. Of these, more than 200 were classified as serious assaults and nearly 80 required medical attention. "Our union advocates every day for policies and procedures that make the job as safe as possible for AFSCME members who work in corrections," Lindell said. Lieutenant Lasco's tragic death is a stark reminder of the risks taken daily by the men and women who work behind prison walls to keep us safe, maintain order, and rehabilitate inmates. That will conclude the first part of the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two.